Hey, good afternoon, everybody. This is Perry Marshall, and I am here with a very special guest today. His name is Mike Van Norden. And Mike, I've known him for probably about 10 years. He is a true blue veteran in direct marketing, and his claim to fame, among several, actually, is a very successful stint in infomercials. And I am going to show you why that's directly applicable to Google AdWords and especially highly competitive markets where you're spending more money to acquire a customer than you even make. And man, this guy's got bullet wounds, war stories, gashes, slashes, bayonets, like every kind of adventure you could imagine, and he's going to tell you about it, and it all directs specifically to what you're doing, but it's going to give you a broader perspective. And I love these crazy friends that somehow I managed to find in the bars of seminar conference rooms and everything. So I'm gonna well, Mike, say hello to these ladies and gentlemen.
Well, greetings from Texas, everyone. Maybe a few of you caught the episode of Dallas last night. Hopefully not, but anyway, that's where I'm from, down in the DFW area. And I don't even know if I should have brought that up, Perry, honestly. But
It's
anyway,
okay.
hello, everybody. Hello, everybody.
Mike, why don't you just well, let me give you a little setup, and then I'll turn it over to Mike. So when I was in the Dilbert Cube, I was studying direct marketing, and I was learning everything I can, and it was working. And it was exhilarating. It was like, oh my goodness, like people are calling, they're sending emails, they're sending faxes. I follow up with them. I can sort of take them by the hand and lead them. I'm not pounding through doors anymore. I'm not banging my face on brick walls anymore. Man, this is great. And I said, man, I'm sort of good at this. Like, I'm not great. I'm just like, I'm decent. Like, what if I became really good, right? And I committed myself to mastery. It's like, I'm going to be so good, you could throw anything at me and I could solve it. That's how good I wanted to be, because I believed, man, if I got from making $40,000 a year to making $70,000 a year by being sort of good, if I was a ninja, maybe I'd make 700, who knows? And so I dug in and I listened to everything, and I never said to myself, oh, that doesn't apply to me. I assumed that everything was eventually going to apply to me. I assumed everything was eventually going to come in handy somehow. And that's how you are when you're in mastery and you just enjoy whatever you can learn and whatever you can absorb. Well, one of the things that I learned was the arc of infomercials. And the arc went like this. The arc was, I remember, like, when I was a teenager, I turn on the TV late at night, and there's like some guy at a Holiday Inn with a camera in the back of the room, and he's got an overhead projector, and he's pitching some get rich in real estate thing, and they got a phone number on the TV screen. And like, it's horrible, obviously horribly put together, but somebody's running it. And I see this, and it just, I don't really think much of it at the time. And then, like 10 years later or 15 years later, I'm listening to people in the infomercial business explain that, oh yeah, that's when late night TV got deregulated, and now there wasn't a 2-minute limit on commercials, it was 30 minutes, and nobody knew what to do with all this airtime. They're selling it really cheap, and eventually all these big companies figured out this is a bargain, and they drove the price up. And so, in 1995, it wasn't a camera in the back of the room at a Holiday Inn. It was a professionally edited, produced, and split tested and market tested production that cost $75,000 just to try out. just to see if it had any legs. And if you saw the commercial for like more than 2 weeks, it meant it was actually making money. And so the barrier to entry had gone up and up and up, and it drowned lots of people. And the only people left were big companies. Okay, so all of a sudden I had a context for what I saw when I was a teenager, and I knew this. Google AdWords comes along, and the clicks are 5 cents, 10 cents, 15 cents, 20 cents. I remember that when they started creeping over a dollar, and I thought, gee, you know, isn't this going to stop? Aren't people going to go, well, gee, dollar's like too much. I'm not going to pay that. Well, guess what? You know, in some markets, they're 50 bucks and 100 bucks a click. Well, I knew that whole infomercial thing, and I said, you know what? That's going to repeat itself here. It's all going to happen the same way, and the thin overhead projector and the Holiday Inn guys are going to get drowned, and only the real players are going to get left. Well, guess what? That turned out to be exactly right. And that's why, from the very beginning, if any of you, you know, own a collector's edition of the Definitive Guide to Google AdWords from 2003, it told you, you better get your sales funnel working, and you better learn how to buy more traffic than the next guy, because you don't want to drown when the prices go up. And I've been telling that to people for 9 years. Well, Mike Van Norden is an embodiment of all that. And without any further ado, that is why he is here. And I got all these questions like, gee, you know, I give Google a dollar, I only get 75 cents back, and it really sucks, and I have to upsell, and I have to cross-sell, and I have to have telemarketers and all this other stuff. Well, guess what? You know, Mike already did this 15 years ago in infomercials. So that is why he's here. He's done all kinds of crazy stuff. I could spend 20 minutes going through his resume, but Mike, tell us your story. Welcome. Glad you're here.
Glad to be here, Perry. And I do have that 2003 guide, and you were spot on. And the exact same thing did happen in the infomercial industry back in the 90s, and I was right smack dab in the middle of it. And just a brief history, you know, I first had an introduction to that world back in the late 80s, early 90s. And I can tell you that back then, yes, media was very inexpensive. It was really just a matter of backing the Brinks truck up to the particular media outlet, loading it with cash, and driving off to the next media outlet. I mean, it was absolutely incredible. Because the media, they had no idea at the time what that airtime was worth. You know, they thought, hey, if we run this at midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, big deal. You know, we're happy to give them 30 minutes. What they didn't know is a lot of guys like us at the time were getting a 5-to-1, 10-to-1, 15-to-1 return on our investment. And when they did catch on to that, in the early to mid-90s, the whole shift took place at that point. And now you're very fortunate to be able to break even on the front end. But there are ways to help supplement, you know, with back end systems and that type thing, which I'm sure we'll get into.
Well, so why don't you kind of just give us like a quick and dirty history of the infomercial business, and then just a quick and dirty history of Mike Van Norden and how they kind of intersected eventually.
Well, I basically, when I was, I think I was maybe 20, 21 years old, I started being involved with a product called Mega Memory, which was huge. I don't know what the total sales are for that product, but it's way up there. It's, I'm sure, in the hundreds of millions by now. And that spawned another product by a good friend of mine, Howard Berg, Mega Speed Reading. And this was back in the very, very early 90s. And I just remember at the time, being involved in helping manage a phone room with hundreds of reps, the phone's ringing off the hook, the phone's going into queue, and it's everything that we did, you know, seemed to work at the time. And, you know, the great thing was, is I was involved in basically every aspect in a lot of these products, from the production to the promotion to the owning and managing the phone rooms to the publicity for those types of products. And, you know, Radiant Health was another product that I was involved with that was immensely successful in the mid to late 90s, actually up until about 2002. And, you know, like I say, Perry, I I was like you. I really devoured everything I could get my hands on, as it pertained to sales and marketing. And fortunately, I was able to, in my very early 20s, to be around some of the best minds in marketing, the Abrahams, the Kennedys, people like that. So I already had a great foundation to start. So I didn't really have to be reprogrammed on what really works in the marketplace. So I did have a tremendous advantage.
So tell, like, so all right, so the, you're backing up the Brinks truck, and like you're just throwing money at the TV stations, and you're making money hand over fist, which, sounds sort of like 2004 in AdWords.
Right.
So then what happens? What happened? How did things evolve, and what are some of the interesting things along the way?
Well, what happened was, is I can remember, in fact, knowing that I had this teleconference today, webinar, I actually went back and looked at some of the old run sheets back when we were running media, 10, 12, 15 years ago. And it was interesting because we were running national advertising on stations like the Food Channel, Food Network, Discovery Channel, Lifetime. These were major national buys. And I was looking back, and some of these buys were 1,500, 4,000, the high end was 7, 8, 10,000. And I was just going through some of the numbers, and I was just amazed at what the cost of the airtime was back then compared to, what it is now.
Now,
And
give us a sense of what, like, if it was $3,000, what does that mean, and what were you getting? Help us understand the scale.
let me give you an example. We had purchased, I was looking back, we had purchased a spot, I think it was on Food Network at the time, and that was not too long after it had been on the air. It was maybe a year after it had been on the air, and it was a $7,000 media buy. And I'll never forget this because we were testing Food Network, Perry. We were testing the infomercial. We didn't want to spend a lot of money. We thought, well, 7,000, we'll give it a shot. So at the time, I owned a phone room down in Austin, Texas, and had hired a good friend of mine to manage the phone room. I had about 12 to 15 sales reps there taking the inbound calls. And I'll never forget, because we had spent about 7,000 on media. I call down there, and the lines are jammed. I'm getting a busy signal, and I'm immediately like, home run. I mean, I knew if the lines are jammed, this is going to be a home run. So I got a hold of my buddy who was managing the room finally around noon, and I said, Rod, how are we doing? He goes, Mike, we have over 100 orders. Now, our price point, Perry, average price point, I had gotten it up to about $283. So if you were to do the math on that, that is about a 4-to-1 return, a little better on the investment. And that is what the type numbers that we were getting at the time. I mean, that's the good, right? You've got the
That's
good.
crack cocaine,
That's,
baby. Oh my goodness.
yeah,
We're
let me tell
done,
you.
baby.
Let me
We
tell
are
you. It,
invincible.
I, oh my
We are
gosh.
so smart.
We're genius. And you're right. And the thing of it is, and remember, that was on the front end. That for now, that's not counting. They were all being put on a continuity. We were doing forced continuity before it was cool. They immediately were put into forced continuity. So, and believe it or not, back then our stick rate was about 18 months. So it was in. I mean, so you know what? I don't know what the total number is, but it's exponent. I mean, it's just almost unfathomable. If you were to take, for instance, that $7,000 spot, and eventually what that equated to, if you were to take it, 12, 18 months out, it was truly staggering. So, that time of my life was just, it was unbelievable. You flip on the television, there's a show that you were instrumental in producing, the orders are coming in, you're doing these enormous numbers. So that's what's great about TV, Perry, is that if it's a home run and if you produce a show, I mean, believe me, it had to have all the elements of a direct response infomercial. We didn't just throw anything up there. The testimonials were great. The call to action was phenomenal. I mean, all the aspects were there, but it was just, it really was like backing up the Brinks truck. It really was. At that time, I mean, things did change, but that's what it was like back then.
Awesome. Sounds familiar.
I mean, you can hear the excitement in my voice. I mean, it's like taking me back in time 10, 12, 15 years, 20. It was incredible because by the time the competition caught on, in a lot of cases we'd already done so well that it really didn't make a difference. There was really about a 4 or 5 year window there where you could jump in with a subpar show would break even. Like you had talked about, with minimal production, okay testimonials, not really thought out, just a decent show was a break-even show. Nowadays, a stellar show with everything right, you're very lucky to be at a break-even, because I know some people in the industry now, and if it wasn't for an incredible back end, there's no way they could make it.
Yep. Sounds
And there,
familiar.
yeah, and here's the thing, Perry, is that, a lot of people, they shy away from the telemarketing aspect. They shy away from direct mail. They shy away from having a sales force out there nose to nose, toes to toes. And a lot of companies that I consult with, there is no other way to make it work. I mean, obviously, they have a tremendous advantage, your mastermind, that group has a tremendous advantage having your knowledge with the Google AdWords, the social media, the Facebook, the Twitter. But most people don't have that. They're very fortunate. And, without, like I say, without that incredible push on the back end and finding other ways to monetize those clients, there's absolutely no way to make it work.
Well, it's true, and I have a sales team, and we have more and more relationship with our customers, and 2005, 2006, you hide in your cave. There is no phone number. There may not even be an email address on the website. You just go over here and you buy this, and that's it. And nobody talks to anybody. And post 08, the online world and the offline world start coming together because they have to, because bridging those two worlds is the most efficient way to get an easy gain. And so there's a lot of guys like me, which I don't know, let's call us Generation Y marketers if you want,
Right.
where we basically cut our teeth on the internet. And we find ourselves teaming up with guys that cut their teeth before the internet and going, hey, I think I need you to make this whole thing work. And many times that's exactly what you need, is you've got to blend the online and the offline, the old skill set and the new skill set. It's like, oh, mailing lists? Yeah, dude, mailing lists.
There is a such thing as mail, right.
There was a time a few years ago where most internet seminars, any reference to direct mail and so on was like derogatory. Like, yeah, the old fuddy-duddy Luddites that think they know how to sell through direct mail. Ha! Well,
Yes.
now they're now we're going and looking up their phone numbers and their snail mail addresses and going and seeking them out and promising them we won't buy them drinks, we'll buy them dinner, we'll buy them a whole week if they'll just sit down and tell us all that they know.
Yeah, it's amazing. They've had this epiphany about direct mail in the last 2 years. It's like, hey guys, we were doing this 25 years ago. It's like, really, in all candor, I cut my teeth in the insurance business, door to door. And, with what I learned from marketing, I was telling Brian this earlier, my father had a small agency in East Texas. And he came in one day and had well over 40 inbound messages on his voice recorder wanting to buy insurance. They were calling him saying, we want you to sell us insurance, because I was doing the direct mail, the advertorials in the local newspapers. I mean, I basically was built that agency up with the knowledge that I had. I was maybe 24 years old, 23, 24. And it just, my whole world changed at that point. And I know you had a lot of the same feelings and emotions, Perry, that it's like this light from heaven just came down. Oh, wow, this is
Yes.
incredible stuff. It
Yes.
really is. It's eye-opening. And, you know, I fortunately, like I say, I did not have to be reprogrammed from a lot of the nonsense that's taught out there today that is theoretical and absolutely not applicable to the real world. And that's why, you know, direct mail's working better than ever right now. Nose-to-nose, toast-to-toast selling's working better than ever. Telemarketing is working better than ever. Like you said, Perry, just having a great relationship with your customer that goes far beyond just the internet. It has to.
2 days ago, I was in the living room, and my daughter was sitting on the couch leafing through a direct mail flyer that had come from a retail store, a national retail chain, that had sent us a piece of mail. Mm-hmm. And she was like, I don't know, looking at bras and underwear or something like that. And she has, there's a dress catalog that she likes to buy stuff from that is a snail mail catalog. Okay?
Right.
Now,
yep.
None of this has anything to do with anything that I do or my influence. You know, it wasn't like, hey, Tana, take a look at this direct mail catalog. See, that's like an old record player. You know, there was none of that conversation. Okay?
Right,
it was like
right,
she
yeah.
likes to leaf through it and look at the dresses. And, you know, so it works on a 16-year-old who's like on her, you know, texting on her cell phone all day long. Truth be told, I'd love to have a snail mail catalog myself for all my own products. We just haven't gotten around to it. I'm sure it would be a good thing if we could somehow manage the project and get it all done and mailed out. But I think people hear the message loud and clear that the easiest way to make these clicks pay is to combine offline marketing with the higher quality leads and customers.
There's no doubt, Perry. I mean, I thank my lucky stars every day that, you know, that I did start out selling door-to-door, you know, in hardcore sales environments, because the lessons that I learned are irreplaceable. It's something that no one can ever take from me, no matter what happens. I know that I could be dropped into any city in the United States and do very well just from having those skills. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people, they, you know, when the internet came along, they thought, you know what, I don't have to look at anyone. I don't have to talk to anyone. I can, you know, go and hide down in the basement and make money and never have to talk to my client. That has all changed now. There was a very short period where that worked, but it just doesn't work anymore. People are yearning for relationships again. It is human nature. It's in our DNA. And that aspect is coming back. And that's why guys like myself, that's really all we've ever done. And don't misunderstand me. I use technology, the internet every day to make money. It's just there's a lot more going on other than just that initial sale on the internet or that initial lead that's acquired via the internet. It then goes into many, many other funnels.
Absolutely. So I want you to tell, I'm going to go to questions in a little bit because I'm starting to get some, but could you tell about two things, you know, how, what started happening as prices went up and what you started actually doing? And secondly, could you talk about regulation, because you ran into that too. So
yeah.
Fire away.
Okay. And things were going so good. Let's see. As far as the pricing of the media time shot up dramatically in about the mid-90s, just as you alluded to, in the mid to late 90s into the early 2000s. And really what it forced us to do, Perry, was be much more judicious in the media that we bought, just like with the AdWords campaigns. I mean, I remember literally I would sit there and pore over the run sheets night after night, go through each individual city, and we might be we were running the show in 70, 80, maybe 100 cities across the U.S., and I would go through and say, okay, we spent $800 on, you know, KVTX, and we brought in $1,100. We got a winner. Okay, then we bought some time in Omaha that might have been $300, but, you know, we sold one unit. at $150. I just say, well, it was a loser, but we still did a unit. And if you look at how both those cities did combined, we're still at a break even. So literally, I had to go through and pick winners and losers. And we had to start eliminating the media that really wasn't performing well. It's like anything else. I mean, as long really as we were at a break even, we were okay. So, like I say, if 2.0 would be a 2-to-1, for example, a 0.5 would be if we invested, let's say, $1,000, we brought in 500. So as long as we could, you know, put those two numbers together and come out at a 1-to-1, we were good. So we had to become, like I say, just sit back and scrutinize over the numbers in each individual market. Now, when you're buying national media, it doesn't matter. When you buy Food Network or Discovery Channel or History Channel, that's going to air nationally in most markets anyway. But on the local stations, much like when you're you know, in AdWords, when you're doing these local ads and that type of thing, we just had to be very, very, very careful. And also what we had to do was we had to really push for a higher ticket up front. And that's where I realized, I said, you know what, if these people will spend, you know, $150, $200, I think we can upsell them to a $300 or $400 product. And believe it or not, we were able to do that by selling multiple months. You know, we were selling supplements at the time, omega-3, omega-6, that type of supplement. So we were selling multiple months to help offset some of that media cost. You know, eventually it got to where you know, like I say, the glory days were over, and we really worried about a 1.2 to 1.5, you know, on our investment, which we were still breaking even up front. We were acquiring customers at a little over break even, so we were happy with that. But we just had to put a lot more time and energy into the media that we were buying. Does that make sense?
You know,
yep.
That makes sense to me too, Mike, and I'll just say, this sounds eerily similar to managing AdWords campaigns, with one major, major difference, and that is, as AdWords advertisers, we have this nice, convenient little interface that we can go and just click around and see all these numbers conveniently displayed for us, and, you know, sort ascending and sort descending and change this here and change the date range and so on. I'm guessing you had to either A, you had a very sophisticated computer system, or B, you just had to do this with a bunch of spreadsheets or by hand.
It was, at the time, it was spreadsheets. It was arduous.
Oh boy.
But it had to be. But here's the thing. It's a trade-off. When you've got $500,000 a week rolling in some cases, you do what it takes to keep that show on air.
No kidding.
Okay? I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, that sounds like a large number, but it is. It wasn't always like that. I'm just saying that you do what you can to keep the show alive, because you know, it's only a matter of time before something is going to change. And just like what Perry had alluded to earlier, I mean, he had this gut feeling. I mean, he knew what was coming from the infomercial industry to Google AdWords. He knew there was going to be some direct application with the costing of it, you know, going up dramatically. And, Perry alluded, wanted me to talk about the regulatory issues a little bit. That is more of what happened to our industry at that point than anything. Were the regulatory issues that people selling supplements, ingestible products that you take in your body, that is what the regulatory agencies had a problem with. Not just our product. I mean, when they lash out at everyone in a particular industry. And that is when we came under the most scrutiny, was in the late 1990s to the early 2000s.
So tell a little bit of what happened, because it could happen. I mean, it's probably not going to happen to people that's selling, metal cutting lathes, but it could happen to a lot of people. So,
if they can find a way to do it, yeah, they will.
So just give us a picture, and what really happened?
Well, first of all, these regulatory agencies are really like giant kidney stones to entrepreneurs like myself and small business. I mean, seriously. They're an absolute nightmare, and that's the only thing I can think that's applicable. And basically, you don't have to do anything wrong. That's irrelevant. If you're on the target, they're going to make it nearly impossible, if not impossible, to continue. And with us, there were a couple of cases you may remember back in the late 1990s where some idiots, you know, took enormous doses of supplements and had some issues with it. A couple passed away. But, you know, when you take a whole bottle of just about anything, there's going to be issues. So any type of herbal, you know, I mean, come on, let's be honest. I mean, any type of herbal supplement, if you sold an herbal supplement, you were on their radar, right? So they would look for ways to come in and make your life miserable. It could be something as small as not having the proper licensing to manufacture the particular product. I mean, you could have but you might not have a $50 or $60 license necessary to manufacture the product. And they'll come in and they'll shut you down. They might not like one of the testimonials. They might not like the verbiage. And sure, was some of that type stuff hypey back at that time with the, you know, you've got models laying out by the pool with 5% body fat, eating cheeseburgers, pizza, drinking beer, and saying, you can look like me if you just take this pill. In fact, you're going to look like me in the morning. Just take a couple of these at night, you know. And there was that aspect, right? That did happen. And look, and yeah, that brought a little bit of light on the industry. But that, you know, that wasn't us. You know, we actually had a legitimate product, legitimate testimonials, but none of that mattered.
People, you know, who have been people who have been dealing with Google for the last 5 years totally get this.
I mean, you know, look, it's frustrating. You know, it's like, you know, there's a domestic dispute at your neighbor's house and they come and handcuff you. You know, why are you – well, because, you know, you live next to this guy. But I don't necessarily know the guy. You know, I mean, but that's what it was like. And it was very frustrating. And here's the thing. If you don't have infinite resources, there's no way to combat the regulatory agencies because they do have infinite resources. So really, you're left with two options. Exhaust every dime you've got, knowing that you can't win just to make a statement. So I'll show them, I'll fight them until I'm destitute. Well, that's not really the smart way to do it. It's better just to pack your bags and move on to something else. But it is hard to recoup that type of revenue when the hammers come down, you know, and you're basically forced out of that industry. Not because of something you did wrong, just because someone else made some claims they didn't like or some other issue that they can manufacture. I'm not saying that some regulation's not warranted, but it's highly overregulated in a lot of interested, you know, in a lot of instances. And a lot of good people get put out of business, and a lot of good products are forced to basically hang it up.
And the best thing you can do is not take it personally. And just take your chops somewhere else.
Yes, and understand, I'm a pretty high-strung guy, pretty aggressive guy, and it is very hard to sit in a room full of bureaucrats knowing that they are anti-capitalist. And some things that you want to say, you know you're better off not saying them. and believe me, and I was, you know, I was a lot younger at the time, too. So, I mean, I was literally fighting myself not to just jump out of the chair and just, you know, but you can't. You're right, Gary. You have to be mature about it. You have to realize that this is what they do. They want you out of business. And anyway, I don't want to get mired down in that. And I'm just saying that things can happen on a dime. That happened within a 30-day period of spending, you know, I don't know, $70,000-$100,000 in media. To basically pulling all that media within 30 days. It's off the air and the revenue stops.
Wow.
It's done. Your income, it's over.
Wow.
That fast. Fast.
Talk about a guillotine blade dropping.
Yeah,
wow.
It was. It was. And the lifestyle that you're living, all of that changes, you know. And it can really... If you're not strong mentally, it can really, really knock someone out for good. It really can. That type of blow can be devastating.
You know, Kennedy has this saying, anything in marketing that works will eventually be banned. Maybe illegal, but, you know, even if the government hasn't been mucking around in pay-per-click, but Google does, you know. And it might even be because of the government. Who knows? But So, you know, be prepared, you know, unless you're selling the most innocuous, boring product in the world, you know, especially if you sell an exciting product that solves huge problems, you will have a bullseye on your head. Like, that's just, you know, goes with the territory.
You absolutely will.
So, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I was going to say, unless you have the financial resources to fight it, and you've got a team of attorneys that are ready to go up against CFDA, FTC, or whatever local regulatory agency there is, you know, it's just not worth the battle if you're selling ingestibles, get rich quick. You know, those types of products are always, always going to be on the radar.
Yep. So I got some questions here. Let's just, like, bang out some questions as fast as we can. And, I mean, this has been rock and entertainment so far, at your expense, of course, but
yeah, I know, it's like, hey, you guys have a good laugh on me. No, no problem. No problems at all. I can take it. I'm over it.
So, first one, how does this thinking correspond with selling six-figure software systems into senior people at mid-sized and large businesses?
Well, you know, that's a substantial ticket. I mean, you know, you're talking, you know, six-figure systems. I mean, if anything, I would think it becomes even more personal and certainly more targeted. I mean, I would want to build an incredible bond. I would certainly want to get information into the prospective client's hand that educates them on exactly what these particular systems do. And this individual may already be doing that, but it's more of a consultative selling process at that point. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know better than I, Perry, but I don't know if that is, if someone clicks on a Google ad for that type of product and orders online, I would have a little bit of trouble.
Very seldom. Very seldom. I mean, the higher the ticket, the more offline you got to have.
And see, for something like that, I mean, I would be sending out detailed educational information to that prospective buyer, whoever is going to be the decision maker, find out who that person is, educate them through the mail. I mean, something they can hold, something they can read, you know, maybe get a little creative with the way it's delivered, you know, that type thing. And because a sale like that, It's I've sold really high-end products like that, not six figures, but, you know, in the teens, and I can tell you that it all emanated from a personal bond and relationship that I was able to build with people both via phone and both via direct mail. I really don't think there's any magical way to make it work other than they have to trust you and you have to have a relationship with that person. Hey, you know what? There's no harm in lead acquisition or getting those leads through that. I mean, that's great because if they're searching and you can get their attention, get them into your funnel. But after that, it's going to require a lot of sales savvy to knock down something like that. No doubt about it.
Yep.
There is no magic pill.
Next question. So if I'm going into a new niche, clicks are approximately $6 a click. Do I start with using direct mail, or do I buy those insanely expensive clicks?
You know, I don't see any harm in buying the clicks as long as you utilize direct mail in response to, you know, it may be a combination, Perry. It might be a combination of, okay, I'm going to allocate X amount. This is going to cost me $6 a click. I'm going to allocate, I don't know, $4,000 or $5,000. I'm going to generate those leads. I'm going to follow up via direct mail. I'm going to follow up and maybe send them to online video, those types of things that I know you're very adroit at and teach well. But direct mail would certainly be a part of it. And you know what? I think, honestly, that the phone, some type of outbound telemarketing would probably – and I know telemarketing, people hear that and bells and whistles go off. But if you look at it as telemarketing, it's telemarketing. If you look at it as bonding with a potential client that could lead to tens of thousands of dollars in sales, you have an entirely different outlook on picking up the phone and making contact with someone. I cannot stress that enough. Some people, I understand, are terrified of the phone. but get over it, okay? Hmm. Because that's what it's going to take. And if you're not willing to do the hard work, don't do it. Save your $6 a lead. Go somewhere else. I'm sorry to be brash about it, but that's really how I feel about it.
And I can say that, you know, if it's $6 a lead or $6 a click, $10 a click, 20, you know, or more, which in some cases it is, if that's the nature of the market you're going into, you can be assured that the big players, or at least one of the big players, is already doing what you described with direct mail and with outbound telemarketing. Someone is. And that's
absolutely
the water level.
That's right. And they've already set the bar. And someone's going to get that client. And it's going to be because of a personal relationship. It's not going to be because they had great web copy, which is important. Don't misunderstand me. I sold millions of dollars in products on the internet. I love it. But we're in a different age now. You've got to go a step further because, you know, those types of sites and that type of marketing has proliferated. So you've got to go above and beyond. You know what? Most people, Brian and Perry, they are not willing to go the extra mile. They're just not. And those that are willing to pick up the phone, to sit down and literally hand write a letter, a direct mail piece. I have my clients in consulting clients do it all the time, and you would be surprised how many say, Mike, I sat down, I hand wrote a post-it note to this individual. They called me and said, hey, I appreciate the time you took to hand write this post-it note, you know, introducing me to the material. And that type of thing is what's going to set you apart from all the other people that are vying for their business.
Amen, brother. Here's a great question. Jonathan says, is there a list of the top zip codes to place AdWords to? If so, where is it? Before I ask you to answer that, I just want to point out that you were sitting there going station by station, city by city, looking where did the orders come in, and where was the advertising spent. And unless you go out of your way and with a lot of complexity in AdWords, you don't know that the same thing is going on in AdWords as was going on with your different TV stations in different parts of the country. It's just AdWords sends you one bill for the whole United States. You know, you being an offline guy, how would you answer this question, Mike?
As far as the zip codes, what was the exact question again, Perry?
He said, is there a list of top zip codes to place AdWords ads in? If so, where is it?
You got me on that one. I mean, I don't know. I don't know.
That's a great Ben Morris question.
Well, I'll give you I didn't mean to put you on the spot, Mike, but I'll give a quick answer for that. If you wanted a really crude, oversimplified answer to this, without too much trouble, you could dig out census data, and it would tell you income by zip code in the United States. And you would have at least a rough idea what zip codes have people that make a lot of money versus zip codes that don't.
Okay, right.
You know, and that doesn't guarantee that you're going to sell more, but probably you will. And probably if you leave out a bunch of poor zip codes, you know, you're going to save yourself some money. You can go to crystallytics.com, Crystallytics. Ben and Crystal Morris. Ben has a service where he does this for people. And there's huge geographical biases in where the buyers are and where they aren't in AdWords, just like there is on TV. Like, Mike, you could probably do a half an hour seminar at least on what parts of the country have what kind of buying patterns from your TV stations, right?
Yeah, and let me tell you something, Perry. They're not always where you think they are. And that's why when this initial question was asked, I wasn't sure if he wanted it denominated by income when he was talking about zip codes. I mean, obviously, you've got Malibu, California. You got Tupelo, Mississippi. Well, but, you know, that's not real hard to determine where the most money's at. But that doesn't necessarily mean they're better buyers. It doesn't necessarily, you know, it's look, when we did the testimonials for Radiant Health, we went to the Midwest. Why? Because people are incredibly believable. There was a believability and credibility factor. We found that a large percentage of our revenue came right through the middle of the country, Perry, right from Texas, right up through Kansas, Ohio, Illinois, you know, right, there was a swath. Now, sure, California, New York, you know, we did fine just because of the population. Yes, people there are more affluent, but the better buyers weren't where you thought they were from. So I just don't want people to get in the trap of, well, people have more money here, so that means they're going to be better buyers. They're going to buy the product that we have. No, it could also mean they're more skeptical and they're a pain in the butt is what it could mean.
Sure.
I mean, I'm being honest with you. It doesn't, you know, people always want to chase the money. We're the wealthiest people. Now, for some products, yes, but a lot of times that's not a real smart way to determine where your marketing dollars go is, well, who has the most money? It doesn't mean you're going to have the most success in that market. It has no bearing on it sometimes.
Excellent answer. Let's see. What's the next one? Next one here. Let's see.
By the way, Guy summarizes it pretty well. The upshot is have a higher conversion rate, more profitable sales funnel in order to overcome higher click costs, and you have to engage offline and cross-sell. And, of course, keep an eye on your numbers. Good old-fashioned advice.
Right. Absolutely.
There might be one or two other questions, but I think Mike is probably, you know, probably getting time to tell everybody, first of all, if they want, explain what you do now, and if somebody wanted to hire you, how would they know that you might be a fit, and tell people how to get a hold of you?
Perry, really the best way, if someone from this particular webinar, if someone wants to get a hold of me, they can email me directly. My email is MikeV, as in victory, 5150@gmail.com. That's MikeV5150@gmail.com. Just put, you know, Perry Marshall webinar in the subject, something like that. That way I'll know who you are. I'm happy to talk to anyone. I basically consult. I coach sales teams. I help with direct mail campaigns. Basically an all-encompassing marketing campaign is what I really help people with. You're the Google expert. You're the Facebook expert. That's something. Basically what I do is come in and say, okay, you're doing all that. Here's how we can make more money from the leads you're generating from the from Google, Facebook, social media, Twitter, whatever it might be. Here's how we can monetize that and take it a step further. And that's what I do. And I'm happy to help anyone, you know, out there that's part of your inner circle. I can answer, you know, help answer any questions if I can. You know, I'm happy to do that, Perry. I really am.
That's great. Well, MikeV5150. The 5150 is a reference to Van Halen. Mike is a incurable Van Halen and Rush fanatic. We every time Rush goes on tour, we have these conversations. So, you know, he's a true, you know, vibrating, hyper responsive buyer in more.
Well,
than...
and and I will say that 6 days and 3 hours from now, I will be witnessing Van Halen live at American Airlines Center. Not that I'm counting, but I just thought I would get that in because Eddie is on fire on this tour. That's,
oh, wow.
We'll say that.
What?
So anyway.
Do you have any, like, comments on what's his name's scathing biography, Sammy Hagar's, you know, book and you know, all the dirt and all this kind of stuff? You, any comments on that?
Sour grapes. you know, let me just tell you, okay? And Sammy, I like Montrose. I like old Sammy, right? But to me, Van Halen is Dave. Always has been Dave, and that's being proven on this tour.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll just leave it at that.
Well, I got a chance to see Eddie play Mozart on the neck of his guitar when I was 17.
Oh,
so
yeah, man, that was great.
That
yeah,
was incredible.
Me too. So, well, congratulations on David Lee Roth rejoining Van Halen. And, you know, congratulations on escaping the clutches of the feds and the guys in the black suits, and congratulations on being a 360-degree marketer, you know, in the world's most confusing age ever.
You know, and I have thoroughly enjoyed this. It brought back some very fond memories. It forced me to go back and look at a lot of the things we were doing back then. And it was truly an amazing time. And I really believe that technology is a wonderful thing. It's incredible. But I think that there's also an issue with the personal touch has just been forgotten. And I think that the marketers that bring that personal touch back and that relationship and bonding with the client, they will be the ones who will win in the end.
You bet. And the last comment from Robert says, so he's never satisfied. Are you a guy, you just can't get enough, huh?
This must be in reference to
Van Halen.
Exactly. I knew if this was brought up that there would be, you know, you never know. There could be a chicken foot or, you know, you don't ever know who you're talking to. You have to be real careful. You know, you go to some of these discussion boards, and if people were face-to-face, there would literally be fisticuffs over this. It's really funny. But, I am happy to get to see my boys here in about 6 days. So, hey, Perry, you're welcome to fly down, man, if you'd like to witness the event with me, you know. Be happy to take you out for a good steak. How about that?
There you go.
Okay, well, Mike, that's truly a pleasure. And actually, this is one of the most fun mastermind calls I've had in a long time. So, rocking good time. I think having beers with Mike would be a pretty entertaining evening. So. Okay.
Yeah, because I haven't even scratched the surface of some of what transpires. But one day we'll talk about that after a few Crown Blacks or something. All right.
Okay. All right, Mike. Thank you very much. That was awesome. Take care.
Thanks, guys.
Bye now.
Bye, everybody.